sense.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Welcome to another episode of Gamer Horizon, and this is your benevolent host, Anthony, and he is joined by the ever-so-ragtag crew of the Gamer Horizon website. First and foremost is my partner in crime,
Alex.
Gamer Horizon's fighting game expert,
Ted here.
And the guy who wasn't in last week's episode,
Chris.
Oh, we're only saying our first names because my name is just Ted, not Ted here.
Oh, Ted. I guess so.
Well, I'm going to refer to you as Ted here the whole episode.
Are you?
Yeah, hey.
You cannot keep that gimmick up for the entire show.
And we can make it another drinking game like last week.
I have to drive, and I have this Vicodin in me, so, you know. No.
Drinking games aren't good right now for Ted, so.
Did you guys know that I actually did post it on the Gamer Horizon Twitter that if they listen to the previous episode, every time Anthony actually says the word indeed, they have to take a shot?
I did see that.
Yes.
I did. I wonder how many shots were taken. Because that would be a lot of fucking shots.
Yeah, totally. Like, I asked the question again, what happened? Either they passed out or they died. I mean, that's what I'm assuming happened here.
So, trying to kill your audience?
I think so. I think my indeeds are fatal, apparently. God damn it! I better stop saying indeed then, the evil word. It's like the word of death. It's just, indeed, and then people die. God damn it. So anyway, off to see what you guys have been up to. Anything that you guys have been new up to, Chris? Since you're the new guy that wasn't in last week's episode, what? Tell us a little bit about yourself, my man.
Well, at the moment I am unemployed, so
you are employed by the Gamer Horizon website.
You guys don't pay me though. So I'm still unemployed.
You want the 4 cents we got yesterday? I mean, it's all yours.
I need a little more than that.
Only can look up from here.
I got plenty of time to play games and turn in resumes. But I've been kind of catching up on my Mass Effect since the latest DLC came out.
Oh, that's the
Omega?
Yeah, the Omega and the
Leviathan?
Leviathan.
Yeah. Leviathan and Omega.
Okay. So I'm trying to think here. Wait,
hold up. I just realized something. Those are characters from Final Fantasy that are like summons.
Holy shit, you're right.
If it's anything, you know, Mass Effect suits appeared in Final Fantasy 13 2 last year, so there you go.
Well, the N7 suit's going to be in Dead Space.
Oh, jeez.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, you didn't know? Actually, all you need is a save file. You don't have to buy anything, which is good.
I need a save file from Battlefield to get the Battlefield suit in Mass Effect.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
And it goes on and on.
Mm. Yeah. You know, if you played the demo of Reckoning, they give you the, Reckoning armor.
Yeah, and the gunny thingy. Yeah. Gunny thingy. Yes, fantastic.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Any... You know what you just did, Chris? Brought back memories from early shows of Game Horizon, which we will be talking about later. But it just, every time I hear that game, Amalur, wow.
What about it, huh?
Good game, but it had one fatal bug in it.
One fatal bug that only affected you, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. Not affected a lot of people. Apparently, there's this one section in this dungeon you go to. I forgot what it was called, but if you leave during the battle sequence, meaning they'll let you walk out the door and go back in, you can't fast travel anymore.
Fatal bugs in Amalur and fucking Skyrim. God damn it.
Jeez. What a segue.
Calm down, baby. Have a piece of cheese.
Alex knows how fatal bugs killed Skyrim for me.
Really? What happened?
Well, it was a fatal bug, so he died.
Now it is my spirit hosting this podcast. No. What happened was it was one of the early quests in Skyrim, and it was the first time when you would get one of the dragon screams or howls or whatever it was called.
Shouts,
yeah. And when you get the shout, you're supposed to get an item, and I never got the item. And I was stuck on this quest ever looping, and I would go back to the same dungeon to find the item. The item never spawned. So I wasted about 30 hours of my life.
It was that Barrow's place, right? Like the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot the whole name, but that was the one, like, you can see from a distance when you exited that whole, you know, intro area and stuff. And yeah, I remember you telling me that you couldn't turn anything in because you couldn't get anything.
Oh, damn. Yep.
And you know what? Oh, it pissed me off because that guy was badass. I had this, what was it, Dark Elf? And he was all fucking badass. And, oh, you can't progress in the fucking main quest. And then other people were like, well, you don't have to do the main quest. I'm like, I kind of want to, motherfucker.
You can't complete the game.
Exactly. I kind of want to kill that big fucking dragon at the end, motherfuckers. But nope, can't. Fucking glitch.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny about that is that the other day, actually it was yesterday when Chris was over, we were playing like Far Cry 3. Well, he was playing Far Cry 3. And then I was, you know, because I was like finishing like one of my reviews and stuff for the website. And, you know, I was like telling him, like, you know, while I was watching him play, I was like, you know what I want to play right now? Skyrim. I don't know why, but I
Don't know why. That game doesn't really remind me of Skyrim.
Far Cry? Well, yeah. I don't know. Like, you know, you didn't have... I don't know. It's open world. I just wanted to see, like, how well it aged or how not well it aged, you know? Like, I mean, what is it? Like, 2 years old now? You know, or a little bit over a year old? So I'm curious to see if it held up, you know? Because I remember that Oblivion, I popped that shit in now, and it looks like shit.
Oblivion looks terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All the women look like men.
I want to play Fallout 3 again.
I have it.
Yeah.
If you want to borrow it.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I don't think that's aged well either, though.
It was fun, though.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
I think it aged better than Oblivion. Come on now.
Yeah, that's true. You know what, though? I think as you know, talking about Fallout 3 real quick, I think that's the best game of the Bethesda games this generation. I liked it better than Skyrim. I played more of it, obviously.
It's pretty imaginative, even though, you know, it uses an existing franchise, but you could tell, like, they put a lot of love and thought into it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Say what you want about the ending. The way the ending was presented was shitty. But it was mostly the presentation, but I gotta say, I really liked the story in it, in Fallout 3. It was more engaging than any of the Elder Scrolls game stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing, you know, it was more personal. You're trying to find your father and, you know, voiced by Liam Neeson, of course. And I really liked that. I think it added a personal depth that's missing from Bethesda games often. Because usually in, like, Skyrim and Oblivion, oh, you're a prisoner.
You're a prisoner every single time.
Yeah, you're a prisoner.
Oh, yeah, because I've seen Elder Scrolls, one of them, and you start off in prison.
Yeah.
You do that in Skyrim, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the very first Elder Scrolls, you start out as a prisoner. So
Damn, somebody's got a prison fetish at Bethesda.
Oh, no. We find out Bethesda's really ran by a bunch of dominatrixes. Ah.
Hey, hey, hey.
If they send you a bar of soap with the next game. No.
Damn, Chris cracking up all the jokes. Holy shit. Gotcha. This is kind of unexpected for me.
He's on the run, man. Chris, you're kicking ass and taking no prisoners, motherfucker. So there you go. Alex, Ted, I should ask Ted first. Anything going on in your world, my man?
I just got my internet back after 5 days of not having it, and I got my car back after giving the dealership tons of money, and I come back to a bountiful bounty of bounty.
You're just because, as bad as...
Yeah, bad at what? The internet?
You're just as bad as a Diablo 3 completionist.
What is Diablo 3? I've never heard of that game.
Okay, Diablo 2.
Wait, who's the Diablo completionist? Ari?
No, Ted, because he came with a bounty. You know how people are all, you know, trying to get all the gold and all the treasure?
No, not a bounty like there's a bounty on my head, but like, say you open a treasure chest and there's
that's what I'm...
No, you've misused the word and you're a terrible person.
I'm a terrible person.
The bounty I'm speaking of is Street Fighter Cross Tekken 2013. So that's a game that a lot of people wrote off. But the big patch, this is the patch of patches. This is the complete overhaul of the game. And they have made a few choice design decisions that basically fix the game.
Hmm.
And I want to say I'm really proud that Maximilian of Assist Me fame in his video for it has used footage of a match he had against me to talk about some of the features. So, yes, I'm not just internet famous. I'm YouTube famous again. But if you've been neglecting Street Fighter Cross Tekken, go download the patch. It's available for everything except the PC. The Vita version has it. PlayStation, Xbox versions have it. And the DLC for costumes and characters is on sale. Characters are 25% off, and costumes are 25 to 50% off.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what we have here, folks, is the next Fred. So, Ted, all you got to do is speed up your voice and make a tasteless child abuse jokes, and there you go. Internet fame for you, buddy.
Oh, my God, Daddy! 8 is enough!
Oh God! With that segue, Alex, less abuse in your life, my friend.
Oh geez, yeah. Everything's been doing good. I've been busy with the website. You know me, like Mr. Businessman, trying to get like you know more hits on the websites. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And other than that, you know, just been kind of like, you know, finishing my review of like The Cave. You know, I haven't touched my PSP since last week, but actually, I don't know if we talked about it in the last episode, but I actually got into like PS1 RPGs on my Vita recently.
Whoa, we'll have to which talk ones? About that.
Which ones?
Yeah.
Don't you remember?
More than one?
Don't you remember what I told you?
You think Chris remembers anything?
let me see. Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy IX, Xenogears, Chrono Cross, Vagrant Story.
Play Xenogears now, Alex, god damn it.
Xenogears might be overrated now that I'm almost 30 years old.
No, Ted, you're off the podcast. God damn it, that game is not overrated.
I am going to play it again once I get through my backlog of 400 games, and I'll let you know. But I just feel like there might be a lot of people that pretending to like Jesus just because the Japanese Christianity looks cool.
hey, I play Xenogears, and I'm an unaffiliated deist, and Jesus is okay, I guess. So,
and there you go.
Isn't all of Xenogears like a Jesus allegory?
No.
Sure feels like it.
All right, Xenogears, does that have giant robots in it?
Yes. Yeah, but then they all die except for one, and then there's like a resurrection, and then
come on.
I think the only Jesus allegory in there is there's a reference to the crucifixion where the main characters get crucified in their gears.
Holy shit!
But that's about it.
Yeah.
All right. So I think I may have played the demo on the PS1 a long time ago, and couldn't get into it.
What? The battle system was actually pretty awesome.
Really?
I'd
have to try it again. I recognize the title. I just don't remember what it looks like.
Okay, so basically, like, the battle system is that you press either the triangle, square, or circle button, and you basically utilize different points or something like that, and you deliver, like, different types of damage. It's almost kind of like Chrono Cross-y in a way.
It's an interesting combo system because it's kind of... And I hate to say it this way. This is the best I can come up with, is maybe a little fighter gamerish. And what I mean is when there's two types of combat. There's person to person, and there's robot combat. When you're person to person, you develop combos, and sometimes those combos will turn into special attacks, and those special attacks will translate into attacks in your giant robot. So. It's a pretty complicated system, and yeah. I would spend hours and hours talking about it. So since
the robot one is kind of, you know, one of the things that turned me off initially, because you have fuel. So every time you do a punch or a kick, you lose fuel, and you can eventually run out of fuel. And the only way that you can get it back is to recharge it all the way up or use an item.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So it's kind of like infinitely casting a magic spell every turn.
Okay. You know? Now I remember. I played the demo and I didn't like it.
No!
Hey, I gotta speak the truth. I didn't like it.
So here's what's gonna happen with Game Horizon Podcast. It'll just be me and Alex again. So
wow.
Okay.
Way to go, guys. That was awesome.
All kidding aside, though, instead of talking about an old game that we will debate for hours, let's talk about what's new on the Game Horizon website.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, we've got a review of The Cave by Alex.
Yes.
So, in your review was, you said it's a game designed by Ron Gilbert.
Not Ron Howard.
I, you know what's funny is I just saw an advertisement for fucking a pop-up ad of fucking Arrested Development, so that's why I said Ron Howard. Oh, so.
Ron Howard narrates your game, DLC, $4.99.
Well, you know what I'd actually buy is if Morgan Freeman was a DLC voiceover for The Cave. That would be hilarious.
Because he is premium. He is a premium voice and can charge a premium price as such.
I agree. I totally agree.
By the way, that's Sony's entire MO as a company. I'm not joking. It's in the book, Sony.
The book, Sony.
There's actually a book called Sony. It was written by one of my teachers at UC Santa Barbara. It's actually a fascinating read as to why that company is so mentally messed up. But that's off track. The Cave is actually available on PlayStation 3. There, yeah. See, that's the segue to Sony. Apologize exactly. And continue.
Now I have to ask, is the book narrated by Morgan Freeman?
No, it's actually narrated by a guy who talked like he knew way more than me, and turns out he did, and did plug his books often in his classes, but...
Who was it? Like, I'm actually now interested in that book.
John Nathan. He was a professor of Japanese studies at UC Santa Barbara.
Oh my God. I took a class with him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
The guy's legitimately smart, and you read that book, and everything Sony has done for the past, like, 15 years makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I took a Japanese literature class with him when I was at UC.
Me too. Was it the study of modern Western Japanese literature?
Modern Western Japanese literature?
Modern Japanese... I say Western because basically by that time the West had really crept into their way of thinking, but basically everything from the year 1900 onward.
I think older than that. Like we're talking like the original. Oh my God, I don't even remember like any of the freaking like books we studied.
If it was modern Western Japanese literature, it would be Naruto's For Whom the Bell Tolls, you know, One Piece and Moby Dick, you know.
That's why Borders went out of business, by the way.
So make sure you check out Alex's review on The Cave. You got anything to say briefly on The Cave, Alex?
I want to talk about that like later once, you know, we get to what you've been playing. So okay. I'll save it for that.
All right. Ari, who unfortunately could not make it tonight because he was not feeling too well, he did a SimCity closed beta impressions. Now, I got to say, when I saw this at E3, I made me... very curious about this game. I even think I said that during our E3 show. Mm-hmm. I'm actually very curious about this game.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like, you know, like one of those moments where, you know, you have like this IP that's been dormant for a while, and it's a good opportunity to bring it back. Because guess what? Like, you've basically raped every other IP that you own, like The Sims, you know, and pretty much said like, oh, yeah, let's bring it back and let's see what else, you know, if we can. You know, the episode of South Park where, you know, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg is basically giving it to Indiana Jones is kind of like what's in my mind right now, you know, Deliverance style, I guess. But SimCity, from what I've heard, and from what I read, by the way, great article by Ari, SimCity is going to turn out to be fantastic.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to it. I read the article today, and I've been looking stuff on the game, and maybe because I'm cheap and don't want to buy a new computer or something, I'm interested in this game nonetheless. So
yeah.
Now, is this an EA product?
It is by Maxis, owned by EA.
Well, there you go.
Oh shit!
Morgan Freeman DLC incoming.
All right.
Get there, so, N7 building.
You'll have a Mass Effect related tie-in also.
Exactly.
Because, you know, because like I guess Mass Effect is like, you know, there's like a saying that I'm thinking of. The Mass Effect is like the town whore of like EA at this point.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck EA. let's talk about Disney for a second.
Okay.
Disney closes Epic Mickey Developer Junction Point. So, Ted, what do you have to say about this? I'm just curious because I just found out about this news recently myself, and I really don't care because I don't really care about the Epic Mickey games.
I'll say this. Warren Spector is a legend in game development and design. He is a luminary in the industry, and he is rightfully praised for all of his contributions to everything that the entire soup that is gaming. I want to reiterate that he is currently unemployed. That one of the greatest minds we have is currently unemployed speaks ill of the nature of our industry, where it is currently common practice to, after a studio publishes a game, to fire all of them. I just want to say, I can honestly say there was a time when I wanted a career in game development, and a lot of that went away with learning how much I would have to sacrifice, and I wouldn't be able to make the kind of games that I wanted. To hear that even he is not immune to this has completely forever, I want to say from this point, forever killed my desire to go into video game development. That news today has killed me. I don't ever want to work in video games. That's it.
Yeah.
God damn.
I mean, that's kind of like the same thing that I was thinking too. Like, I quit the video game industry like just a whole decade ago because like it was just, you sacrifice so much of your life, you know, to make one game, and you put in so many hours, like 60 hours a week, and then sometimes and it seems like it's necessary for you to actually move from one company to another if you want to be able to advance in the industry. And what kind of living is that? Like, you're moving from East Coast to West Coast. I mean, not to kind of dog on the people who actually love their jobs and stuff. I mean, more power to you. But as far as I'm concerned, like, I can't live like that. Like, I want to be, you know, I want to be at peace with, like, my surroundings and actually stay for like, you know, for a long time. I don't want to be moving around like a gypsy or a hobo or not to say that game designers or whatever are hobos,
or gypsy and hobo.
You know, but you know what I'm they talking about.
They take the train and their sticks and bags and leave.
Oh god. Okay, that was a bad comparison. I'm sorry.
You know what it sounds like is and in some ways it parallels what happened in Hollywood, you know, with throughout Hollywood's history, you know, with the studios,
mm-hmm.
and trying to take creative control and things like that. And you're hearing more and more of that in the game industry these days.
Yeah.
So in some ways, you know, some of us who have become somewhat jaded with the game industry, we have good reason to do so because, you know, back in the day, I used to be against kind of that elitist, you know, what seemed to be elitist to me, that games had more creativity back then. And I'm starting to think that maybe that sentiment is right. You know,
Well, the thing is, you know, right now, because, you know, games are big business, it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more leaning towards that and to try to find, like, the biggest trend and kind of exploiting it. So, like, for example, you know, Call of Duty is the latest trend and stuff, like, you know, and but only a few years ago, while Call of Duty is just kind of, like, getting its starts and stuff, the music game genre was, like, you know, the bread and butter for, like, a lot of people. And then look at where that went, you know?
Yeah, and then if you even go further before that, you know, at one point JRPGs was the trend, and, you know, platformers, and
yeah, late 90s, it was all Square's, like, RPGs and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, that it's interesting to see how the trends have changed over the years. So
it's interesting to notice that these companies haven't really changed their business model yet,
mm-hmm.
or at all. Square hadn't changed, and they own, other than RPG properties,
I don't know. Like, I think they've changed it in a way. Because, I mean, if you look at Eidos, I mean,
yeah,
that's they're handling that, you know, group a little bit differently than the Japanese.
But they have to. I mean, Eidos is completely different than who did they merge with?
Enix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, two of the same companies that do the same thing, and they didn't do anything different. Yeah. Now you got Eidos up in there, and they have to do something different.
Yeah. It's a little tricky, because Alex and I have talked about this, and I think the thing you got to consider is with Eidos, Square Enix is kicking ass with Eidos. There's no doubt about that. But on their Japanese side of things, what's changed with them is their Japanese side of things is not producing the quality that they used to produce. They have changed a lot. They're helping produce some mega, you know, AAA stuff on the Western, on their Western side, but on their Japanese side, they're sluggish. They're very sluggish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fact.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Square Enix is not a bad company by any means these days, but they're not the same company they used to be either. So.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think that does.
Wait, you forgot something. Yeah, you forgot about Ted's, like, awesome review of Tokyo Crash Mobs.
Okay, Tokyo Crash Mobs. Let's talk. Ted, tell us about Tokyo Crash Mobs, because I don't know what it is.
So, if you've ever heard of a game called Puzzloop, or a game called Magnetica, or even a game called Zuma, you already have the gist of it. Tokyo Crash Mobs is a match three game, where the idea is there's all these colored balls in a line, and if you match three of the same color in a row, they disappear, the line compresses, and if you make another match of three, then it compresses, you get a combo, and so on and so forth. There's a few innovations to the gameplay. There's actually a mode in which you can throw balls up and over the line, and even where you can roll under the line, and then there's even one that's kind of from the first person as the line surrounds you. But I have neglected to mention you are not throwing balls at other colored balls, you're throwing people at other colored people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what kind of puzzle pieces are they using?
Now, the plot of the game is, from what I've been able to determine,
there's a plot?
Maybe. Having completed the entire story mode, the answer is maybe. I will now summarize. So there are two main characters. One is Grace, a woman who hates waiting in line for the hot new restaurants. So she throws people at other people to match them and remove them so she can be first in line. Possibly the matching murders them. More likely, it is shown in each level is prefaced and followed by full motion video.
Yes.
So they are left, like, writhing in pain or confusion on the ground as she walks by them to
what
go the into the
rest. What the fuck are you playing?
This is only one part. So maybe she is an evil, terrible person that takes waiting in line, so she removes people from the line so she can be first. And then sometimes maybe her head is embedded with a stoplight, or maybe it isn't. Maybe there's a ninja. I don't know. The other character, Savannah, is either dreaming or stuck in a well of her own insanity as the same colored characters press buttons that drop her, creating a hole under her that drop her into space. Why is space beneath her? I don't know.
What the
fuck? Is she training to be a ninja? I don't know. That might be happening. All I know is at one point, Grace finds her sprawled out on a floor in a room made completely of white and gives her a button that opens a hole above her, sending her into space, but it's okay. And she's finally happy instead of being sent into the realms of madness.
Here's what I'm going
to tell you. Also, every seven levels you fight ninjas.
Shit. Here's what I'm going to tell you guys to do. Go read the article and then try to make sense of this madness, okay? And while you're reading the article...
Okay, I don't know.
Go ahead, Ted. I want to hear... tell us more insanity of this game.
Well, what I felt like is you get past the insanity and you have a game that hits many high notes, but because you're throwing people, it feels like it's too slow. It's killed by a few... I mean, I gave it overall a positive score, but I feel like other games in the genre do it better, even though I think there's some definite innovations in the gameplay.
Okay.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so like I said, go read the article and try to make sense of it. Do research, try to analyze it, dissect it from a literary standpoint, or, you know, if you value your sanity, don't even fucking play the motherfucking game. So
just read Ted's article.
Yeah, just read Ted's article. So with that said, let's talk about something that's more sane. So, Chris, being that you're the new guy who was not on last week's episode, I will ask you this ever so famous question. What have you been playing, good sir?
Like I said, Mass Effect 3. I'm trying to get my perfect scenario, so I literally went back and played through all three games.
Jesus.
Yep. all three games and how short of a span of a time, my friend.
I've always wanted to play the three again, except be a complete bitch.
Be renegade.
Yeah, I went completely Paragon and I felt kind of bad because I was such a wuzzling. Like, we have to do the right thing for the people. We're all part of a greater society now.
Well, I saw this quick YouTube video where some guy did that, went renegade, and some of the choices he made were dark. I mean, dark.
Like what? Like, give us an example.
Oh God! In Dead Space 3. When you're helping,
wait, Dead Space 3. Really
yeah, Dead Space.
I'm sorry.
You got a copy of Dead Space 3?
I'm sorry, Mass Effect 3. Mass Effect 3. When you're helping the, I'm really bad with names. The Asari, and she's gonna go save her daughters. God, except I'm terrible with names. I can't remember her name.
The mom Asari. Let's Morinth. Call her that.
Morinth. Oh, Morinth. That's okay. Her name. When you're helping Morinth, and you go to the Asari temple. And at the end, it gives you a choice whether she says that I'm really bad with stories, too.
But okay, give us a gist of what it is.
Basically, she's going to kill herself to keep from killing her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can stop her from doing that.
Or you can encourage it?
No, you can let her do it.
Okay. That's not too dark. Dark would be like if I encouraged her to die.
In, let her die, then turn and kill her daughter, as in dark.
I've seen darker shit in Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Let's kill the Rachni or let him live.
Yeah, let's kill an entire race or not.
Or let him live and have them kill all of us.
Yep.
Shit. Mass Effect, you crazy, crazy game.
But that's it, though? I mean, that Mass Effect, that's it?
From what I can remember.
Well, you played Far Cry 3 last night.
Yeah, I do really want to get that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm probably just going to wait for a sale or...
I mean, I can let you borrow it, but you have to review it.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh! I can do that,
but...
He's like, but...
Didn't we? We haven't done that one yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Okay. So, late review.
Review it. Review it. Review it.
Far Cry 3.
All right. All right, I'll do that.
Yeah. I don't know how relevant that's going to be, but...
Yeah, Chris, don't succumb to my peer pressure there, buddy.
You know what? It's a really fun game.
Yeah?
It's really fun. I never played Far Cry 1. Far Cry 2, I bought it, I played it, and it was so repetitive with the driving from place to place. You always run into the, you know, whichever other faction you're fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
And it just did me, and I couldn't take it.
Did the malaria mechanic, like, bother you at all?
Yeah. Only when it came up. Only when it came up did it bother me, because, I mean, who the hell wants to have malaria, even in a video game?
A great way to lose weight.
You know, but, yeah, that game just did me in. I couldn't take it. And this one is light years better.
I've heard that too. That's a game I'm curious about, but I've got enough coming out in the next couple of months. I think I'm going to pass on Far Cry 3 for now.
I named it my game of the year last year. It's really worth checking out. I don't know.
I mean, just pick it up when it gets cheap and play it later. It actually is really fun. Plus, it looks a hell of a lot better.
Yeah. Not a lot of that, like, sand or whatever the hell they had, like, part two. I forgot, like, what part two was.
Well, two, you were in
sand.
Africa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You were in Africa.
Yeah, everything was brown.
Is it me or... Oh, God, I'm going to get crucified for this.
Say it.
Okay. Is it me or does Africa not make a good place to make games in? We saw what happened with Resident Evil 5, so, I mean...
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know.
I'm not being racist here.
Oddly enough, we've gotten away with doing games in the Middle East for years. You think that would be a problem?
Oh, shit. That is true.
Well, if we're going full racist, we could just say, you know, nope, keeping it in my hat. Got to learn when to keep it in my hat.
Which I forgot. I did forget one very important thing. Chris...
Yeah,
I think you're going to be our resident sports game reviewer moving forward.
Damn it!
Oh no! If I was Chris, I would scream no, and then scream for Padme afterwards.
Good night, folks. Have a great night. We hope you enjoy the show.
And I'm not a fan of sports games. I'll play them, but
did you listen to the previous episode?
No, yeah. I missed it.
Well, there you go. There, if you listen to it, you'll know why.
Because we're missing one certain expert.
Yeah, you know, we missed you. So we're like, yeah, let's bring Chris in there. No, you just listen to it. Just listen.
Okay. Listen to our podcast. We need more downloads, Chris. You're part of Gamer Horizon. I expect better from you. Okay, after I'm done scolding Chris, I'm going to ask one Ted.
Whoa, what's that noise?
Somebody's eating.
Or something.
Not me.
Damn it.
I put the bag down. It's okay.
Was it chips?
It was chips.
What kind?
They are Fritos.
Hey,
they are Fritos.
We know what Ted's been playing.
If there were sun chips, it would have sounded like this. The joke is, sun chips bags are loud because they are made from compostable material. Yes.
So we know Ted's been. I don't even have to ask him what he's been playing. He's been on the awful Doritos website playing the Dorito Flash game. So. No. Anyway,
what achievements?
Trying to get free Dorito bags, free Loco Tacos too. Anyway, Ted, what have you been playing, my man?
Well, with the internet down, it's kind of annoying to play fighting games by yourself, but Steam has a nice offline mode, and I've been blasting through Borderlands 2's DLC. I'm on Sir Hammerlock now.
Yay.
And that is, wow, that is a change from the other two.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're all different.
Well, Sir Hammerlock has the advantage of assuming you're already a high level, so starting you off hard, whereas when I was playing through Torg's Campaign of Carnage, that was basically balanced around level 30 when I was already level 35, so I never had a problem. This started me off at I'm level 36, like, oh, you're 36? Have fun, everything's level 36. Oh, and these witch doctors, you are going to hate them.
Oh, yeah. Witch doctors are a bitch.
It's so amazing just how much they have changed the way it feels with this DLC, and I really like what they've done so far, even though it's really hard, and I have just gotten started with it. And it's hard to get around. Like, I actually had to look up a map to tell me how to get to this one point when I thought it should have been obvious.
Yeah. They still have a problem with that, I think, with their, not mapping, but...
Waypoint
systems, yeah. Yeah, they have a problem with when the quest sets a marker, if if they're right on top of one another, I mean, up above, they sort of give you a hint in throwing in another arrow above the diamond. And so that'll let you know you have to go up. But there are other instances where they don't do that. So you can be looking on the ground, looking on the ceiling. You're looking for something that you have to get. And it's just not there because you either have to make your way up or down.
You guys talking about Borderlands 2 reminds me that my Borderlands 2 is sitting on the shelf gathering dust. It's doing nothing at the moment.
Well, it's a great game.
Another game that I haven't even touched.
I wondered what that game would be like now if they hadn't changed the art style. Would it be as popular?
Oh, from what it was before, like the cell shading?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. They might have confused it for Rage because that was kind of like, you know.
And it's funny because when did Rage come out? Well, after Borderlands 1.
Rage came out last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2011, maybe?
That would be 2 years ago, dude.
It came out around the same time as Battlefield 3, so that had to have been 2011. Because I remember this because Rage and Battlefield 3 had the same driver issues with my graphics card. So yeah, it was about the end of 2011. Interesting, it just got new DLC like a month ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's new. Yeah, did we forget? Did that just happen? Yeah, there was new Rage DLC. It's called the Scorchers. It's $4.99, and it adds like new difficulty and a new scenario. And you probably already traded the game back in.
Ted's absolutely correct.
You know, people complain that DLC comes out too soon after a game comes out.
No. You need that stuff soon because if you wait 3-4 months, you're on to plan something else.
By the time this podcast comes out, there's actually going to be an interesting piece of DLC coming out for a game that came out a long time ago. On February 5th and February 6th for PlayStation and Xbox, respectively, the Scott Pilgrim video game is getting new DLC.
What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
There will be a new character, Wallace Wells, and here's the big one, online play.
Yay. What? You mean you couldn't do that before?
It was local only.
Oh, God.
Online multiplayer. I don't know if the online multiplayer part is DLC or it's just the Wallace Wells character that's DLC, but the fact that they're releasing DLC for a game that I believe is over 2.5 years old is either stupid or respectable. I think Ubisoft, the publisher, is like, well, let's see what kind of traction this gets if we can resurrect an old game with, you know, DLC or if it just falls flat. And I think Ubisoft is willing to spend some money to do some market research, if you know what I mean.
While they're at it, why don't they give me some fuck DLC for cloning Clyde?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Like, it's really interesting, like, with that game and stuff, because, like, you know, that's not the only beat-em-up that actually only has local play. I mean, Double Dragon, the newest one, only has local play. You can't even play that shit online, which is really weird.
I wonder if they're doing that to really capture the old-school feel. I don't know. It's kind of strange.
Does it really matter if there's like a little bit of lag? I mean, obviously nobody minded it with like Castle Crashers. Or did they? I don't know.
We're playing Castle Crashers online.
Castle Crashers is online play.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying, though, is like, you know, like nobody minded the fact that, you know, like there was a little bit of like latency when like you're playing the Castle Crashers, if you even notice it at all, which kind of then, you know, it just confuses me that this is now, like, what, showing up 2 or 3 years later? I mean, or four, even five?
You look at some of the beat-em-ups that Capcom released is on the online stores. For example, that Final Fight game uses the same networking connectivity as the fighting games. It uses GGPO.
Is that the Final Fight that came out with Magic Sword?
That is correct.
Okay, I have that. So
that has
I got that, too.
GGPO basically allows for pitch-perfect online play. It's a way to hide lag so that you don't notice it. It's really interesting, and, I mean, the guy who developed it has probably done quite well for himself. He's one of the organizers of EVO, actually.
Hmm.
One of the Cannon brothers. Sadly, can't remember which one off the top of my head.
So, yeah, I don't know about this whole late DLC thing. It's You know, as long as I get my Cloning Clyde DLC, I think I'll be happy.
Jesus. So. Well, how much is this DLC though? Do you know?
The Scott Pilgrim DLC will be $4.99.
Jesus.
Too much.
New character $4.99.
Or 8 million Microsoft points. Just kidding. It's 400, but the exchange rate can be hard to do if you haven't already like internalized that math in your head. Mm-hmm. 80 points is $1. There you go. I'm happy.
There.
So anything else you've been playing, Ted?
Let's see. I played a bunch of Borderlands. My internet down, so I can't play a lot of things. I wanted to play Leviathan on Mass Effect 3, but I can't because I had to switch my Xbox out. So, and I did a hard drive transfer, which means all of the content is licensed to my old box, which means I can only access it when I have a logged in Xbox Live connection.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that you actually have to be logged into EA's server just to play your DLC.
It's fucking EA, Chris. Why are you even questioning them? It's fucking
bullshit.
EA. That has nothing to do with EA. That's a Microsoft limitation.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So that's not on PS3 then.
No, PS3, the content is just, well, it depends. For some games, including Final Fight Double Impact, the DRM is, I believe, you have to be logged into PlayStation Network to play.
What?
Yeah, there are some DLCs. I'm trying to think of them, and the only one that comes to mind is Final Fight Double Impact. Capcom tends to be using that optional PlayStation DRM.
Fuck that!
Yeah, well, don't buy Capcom games. You vote with your wallet. But you know what? Everyone else is going to vote with their wallet, and they're going to buy the game, and you're going to be like, oh.
Yeah. It's only going to get worse next console generation.
Well, here's what's going to happen. I'm sorry. I'm resigning from Gamer Horizon because I'm a hypocrite.
Jesus, what the hell is like?
I'll be buying Capcom games. So,
Jesus.
So nothing else, Ted, you've been playing?
Nothing else really comes to mind. I got a few single-player campaigns in PlayStation All-Stars done. But without the internet, what can you really play? Which is kind of a sad state of affairs we have going on here. Oh, yeah, and I played Tokyo Crash Mobs for the review. Whatever.
Wow. Totally dismissed Tokyo Crash Mobs.
I gotta tell you, even though I gave it a positive score, it's not a game I feel like I want to go back to. And I do feel like that opinion is reflected in the review.
Okay.
Okay. Well, read the review then, folks. Go to our website at GameHorizon.com and read Ted's review of Tokyo Crash Mob and learn and try to figure out what the fuck that game's about.
So. And find out what score I gave it because I didn't say it on the air.
Yeah.
I don't give that one out for free. You got to give us a website click.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, click on other things as well, too, please. Anyway, Alex.
Yes.
Alex, what have you been playing, good sir?
So I got really into Final Fantasy IX.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, Final Fantasy IX?
I want to tell you a story about Final Fantasy IX before we continue.
Go.
I got to the last boss, got to the save point, fought the last boss, got tore up by him so bad, I deleted my save. 10 seconds later, what the crap did I just do? And I haven't touched the game since. That was about 12 years ago.
Damn.
That final boss wasn't that bad.
I didn't build. I don't know. I just got so mad. I deleted my save and haven't touched the game for 12 years.
I don't remember the last boss, wow. But I know that, you know, towards the end of that of Final Fantasy IX, I felt some sort of, I don't know, like disenchantment for it. And I actually like finished it like maybe like 2 or 3 months after like I got to like the last disc or something like that. I don't remember exactly why. Maybe, I don't know. It's just some really weird stuff. But actually, now that we have like things like, you know, the Final Fantasy Wikia and all that stuff, I actually was reading on some of the references that it had with the previous Final Fantasies because, you know, as you guys know, Final Fantasy IX is pretty much an homage to the entire Final Fantasy series up to that point.
Like, so, there's a Garland from Final Fantasy I,
mm-hmm,
Garland reference.
Yeah, and also Princess Cornelia is basically, you know, a reference to Cornelia, which is the first, you know, ever town you ever visit in Final Fantasy. And so on and so forth. Basically, like, it's just, you know, it's just wave of, like, nostalgia one after the other. And it's such a stark contrast to the previous, like, you know, what is it, like 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, like 5 games in the series, like that it's like so dark, like all 5 of the previous games are so fucking dark. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 were just like, you know, slit your wrist kind of emo storylines and shit. I was like, wow.
I don't know about five so much.
Oh,
but
come on. Like with the stuff with Ferris.
Oh, come on. Five was the only thing is the old man died. That was it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. A character died. That was it. That was the most. No. 9 is basically like sugar and saccharin, like as far as like Final Fantasies go. Because, I mean, nothing really terribly bad happens in that game. Like, so far from what I've played and remembered of it. You know, it's really lighthearted so far. And even the art style is really lighthearted, too.
I looked at that game a few months back. And I think graphically, it doesn't look bad at all.
It's held up.
It really has, yeah.
I mean, I think I could say the same for, you know, Vagrant Story. What else did I play? Xenogears. You know, what's funny is that when I popped in Chrono Cross, like, I thought I was going to fall in love with the game. And, you know, I have fond memories of the soundtrack, and it has a really fantastic soundtrack. But the game does not. Not aged well, I don't think. Like, just color palette.
A lot of those games just haven't aged well.
No. The other games that I mentioned, you could still play them, and you'll still be able to appreciate, you know, like the gameplay and the look of the graphics, because the way that they did it is it's very stylized. But pop in like Chrono Cross, there were some things that was just like, I don't know, man. Like, just there's some weird color combinations they have there. Like, you know, like
hues, I agree.
Multiple hues of orange, yellow, and like more red. You know, it's like it's weird.
You know what, Alex? I told you this before, and I really have apprehensions towards that game. I told you, and I'll tell the audience, and I'll tell Ted and Chris that. When I first played that game, I was really excited to play it, and it was one of the most disappointing games I've ever played. And I know a lot of people like Chrono Cross, but it disappointed me. It really did.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know what it was I beat that game, and I remember I didn't know what, and people could call me fucking retarded, stupid, whatever, but I don't know what the fuck went on in that story. That story was fucking odd. That you know, and then it tried to connect to Chrono Trigger in some weird way, and I'm like, fucking Chrono Cross would be called Chrono.
That was easy, because basically 100 years after the year 2300, which would be the year 2400, they did an experiment that basically crushed the whole world into a tiny bit and all of time together, and that's that island you visit near the end of the game, and that's the link to Chrono Trigger. Also, Luca got murdered.
Well, that's not difficult.
There you go. The entire justification of the Chrono Cross, Chrono Trigger storyline tie-in.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna pop in the real Chrono game called Chrono Cross in my DS. Just stick to that for now, folks.
Wait, you? No,
but you didn't like it.
No, Chrono Trigger, I meant. Chrono Cross, Chrono Trigger.
I don't
Trigger.
Like Chrono Cross, but I'm going to play it again.
And you know what? I'm being a hypocrite because I did buy it. So, but again, to be fair, I haven't played that game in years either.
Shit, I bought it twice. I mean, I still have the disc version. Now I have it on a fucking Vita. So, which, by the way, the only reason why I actually tried these again is because of Ted's like enthusiasm last week about, like, you know, the PlayStation 1 emulation like being fixed, and yeah, I have to say, like, they did a really good job with that.
Awesome. And how much of these games did you actually play, Alex?
I want to say like I spent about 2 hours for each game, like over the past weekend.
I want to hear what you have to say about Xenogears. I have to ask.
Okay, well, I played it, you know, I played a little bit of it, obviously, like, you know, a couple hours. I basically got to a point where Faye had to leave town. You know why, obviously. And the game holds up. The thing is that I kind of miss, and this is kind of a dumb thing to kind of miss, is that when I played it on my PlayStation 1, every time I heard the disc spin or read, I knew that a monster was actually going to attack me.
Yes! Yes! That used to be true for a lot of PlayStation games with random encounters, because they weren't random encounters. It was the disc spinning encounter.
It was true, but it was more true with like Xenogears, though, because you'd hear like the psst, and then be like, "Oh shit, here we go!" You know, that's when you knew. And I am kind of looking forward to those battles where you are in your gear and you're beating the shit out of people. I think that is like one of the funniest things like that you can do in like Xenogears. Like, you're basically in your gear and there's like little people that you have to fight, and you can like totally one shot or two shot them and stuff, and then just fucking fall.
Yeah, it gives you an option later on in the game where you could get in your gear and fight the fucking small guys.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so funny. It's just, it's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, you know, I enjoyed it. I mean, I like the whole gameplay of it. I don't like the fact that I can't play it with my analog stick. You know, it's D-pad only. You know, that kind of, you know, it took me a little bit of, you know, a little while to actually get used to it again. But otherwise,
you know,
it was pretty
good.
Know
you can change those controls in the emulation, right? They're much more customizable than they used to be in earlier firmware.
Oh, really? So you can swap the D-pad and the left stick?
If you turn off the if the game support, if you turn on analog mode, then the left stick is basically set and so is the right stick. But if you choose digital mode, the left and the right sticks can be mapped.
Oh, God, so okay. Okay, all right. Now I'm going to try that after
also,
we're done.
Also, the
with
mapping,
this.
It's way better than it used to be than like when you did the PSP. Like, the left stick could be mapped to like the L or the R buttons. The sticks can be mapped to almost anything. In fact, if you want to map them to up, down, but not left, right, you can actually do that. Mm-hmm. Like, any combination you could probably want to use are available to you in the emulation, which is, like I say, with the new firmware, they got it. Mm-hmm. They absolutely have nailed it.
Yeah, it's great.
The new firmware is great.
Whoa.
The new firmware is great.
You're turning into a robot over there, dude.
Optimus Anthony now. No more Optimus Alex.
I know.
My DSL's straightened.
No, but like... the other game too, like that I was playing over the weekend, you know, was Peace Walker on PSP. And the only reason why I tried it out is because, like, I was like, you know, I had a hankering for like Metal Gear, so I was like, all right, let me try this again. And you know, it's pretty good, but it's like, it's mission based, so it's kind of like, you know, how in Final Fantasy X you had like a list of missions you got to do. It's kind of like that. So it's kind of jarring. It's not like a whole adventure that you can go through from beginning to end and just have to worry about, like, Snake. It's like, all right, after this mission, do this mission. And you have an optional mission where you're not Snake. And I'm like, ah.
Oh, and you could even set your fucking headquarters. You could even set up people to cook in the fucking cafeteria for you.
Oh, jeez, I haven't even gotten to that part.
Yeah, it's important. You got to have good food. Food feeds a battle.
Exactly.
All right. Now, did you guys try the Metal Gear? What's it? Which one?
Metal Gear Rising demo.
Rising. Yeah.
Funny thing, I have actually had that demo for months because I had the Zone of the Enders HD. But guess what? Another game on my backlog.
Aww.
So I haven't even touched Zone of the Enders HD. I have all these games. I have hundreds of games and thousands of dollars spent so I can have this museum, and I don't know why.
You know what you could do, Ted?
Kill myself?
You could go onto this website called YouTube and be cool and have unboxing videos.
Unboxing videos? I actually have a video on YouTube that explains the conspiracy behind unboxing videos. It's one of my more recent videos, and one I'm not exactly 100% proud of the way it came out, but it basically explains why we do unboxing videos. Check it out. YouTube.com/Thoth. THOTH. Go peep on that.
Anything else you've been playing, Alex?
Oh, geez. I can keep going. Okay, like, I also played a little bit of Persona 3, but then I stopped. And actually, going back to Peace Walker, you know, I was doing the missions, and then I fell asleep. I mean, you know, this is not a reference to I feel asleep. I literally fell asleep playing, like, Metal Gear. And to answer Chris's question, I did play the demo, and I don't know. I was telling Anthony, like, that, you know, the other day that there's no dodge button in this fucking game. There's no block button.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's...
That perplexed the fuck out of me. That perplexed the fuck. What the fuck?
You just have to run away and jump.
Like Mario.
Exactly.
Mario Gear Rising.
It's like Strider, you know? Like, in Strider, you just run away, and then you hack at it, you run away, and that's all you do.
Pretty much.
I mean, hell, like, you know...
One-shot kill.
I mean, hell, like, Ryu Hayabusa has a fucking dodge and a block. What the fuck? Like, it's like... It's like, yeah, let's... I don't know.
But he's not a cyber ninja like Raiden is.
Oh, gosh. I'm a cyber ninja. Therefore, I'm not even going to fucking dodge anything. Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
Cyber ninjas can't block, apparently. It's too advanced for him.
Yeah.
Too old school. I won't do it.
God.
So that's all you've been playing, my man?
Yeah. I better, like, you know, quit while I'm ahead here. I'm pretty sure there's more, but that's all I can remember right now.
Oh, Alex, playing too much. Playing too.
Hey, at least I'm getting my fucking backlog, like, you know, like, down and shit.
And yeah, we need to really kill our backlog. We should have a backlog challenge for the summer.
There's a backlog challenge on, like, one of the forums I frequent that dares us not to buy a single video game for a year and finish our games, the games that we have. I'm going to fucking fail that right away because, you know, Bioshock Infinite's coming out, you know, like 2 months from now and stuff.
Only 2 months.
I still haven't finished the pre-order game for Bioshock Infinite. That's how bad my backlog is. I can't finish a pre-order game.
It almost reminds me of, like, that one game called, what is it, like, The Incredible Machine, but a little bit more puzzly, I suppose. I don't know if that's a good comparison.
Yeah, Incredible Machine, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. I also remember that shitty Fable pre-order game you could get.
Oh, geez, what the fuck was that?
Fable 2 pub games.
What,
right?
Yeah.
And you could get money to play in Fable 2, and then... Fable 2, you're like, well, that was a video game that I ended up getting for free because of a Xbox Store glitch where they were doing this thing where they're trying to release Fable 2 as an episodic game, mm-hmm. but for about an hour they screwed up and released the whole game for free, and I happened to check the store exactly at that moment. That's also why I have a free copy of Undead Nights, because happened to be on the PlayStation Store at, say, 1 a.m. when they're updating the PSP store, and instead of putting the Undead Nights demo up for free, they put Undead Nights for free.
Isn't that counterproductive? Isn't that counterproductive? Let's release the full game, then we'll release it fucking episodic, guys.
Well, they're trying stuff, I guess. I don't know.
That's trying stuff?
Well, they want to see maybe if the game wouldn't sell by itself, then maybe it would sell in installments. Mm. I don't know.
So that's what you guys have been playing, right? All of you guys?
Yeah, but one person we haven't asked is you, Anthony. What have you been playing?
Oh, shit. All right, so I'm still on an old school kick. Now, mind you, last week I kind of perplexed Alex, Ted, and Ari with some of the games I played.
Perplexed or bored?
That was like, what was that? How is that, you know, a game?
That's kind of like my reaction, too, and I kind of zoned out. I'll be honest. Like, if if you didn't hear me last week, I was just, like, you know, sitting back in my chair, and I was like, all right, Anthony, just keep talking. Just keep talking.
You know, there's been a lot of changes to Gamer Horizon, but the one thing that hasn't changed is Alex is still a bastard. So anyway, what have I been playing? Well, I played games that I know you guys have heard of. Okay. So my buddy and I, we busted out the PS2 because we were bored, and I have this old the Midway collection, right?
Ooh.
The second volume.
The old Midway collection? Because I actually just picked up the new Midway collection that came out on Xbox 360 and PlayStation.
No, this is an old one that was released on PlayStation 2.
The one where they did Volume 1, Volume 2, and then Volume 3 was all racing games?
Yeah.
I remember those. I want to play San Francisco Rush and do all the shortcuts.
I don't know how you're going to do that, given that you have like 400 games to go through.
It had online play in arcades. I remember WaveNet, and it was the coolest thing ever.
You know what's funny is that those games would add technically 20 more games to Ted's backlog. So
I have my Sonic's Ultimate Genesis collection, but I also held on to my Sonic Mega collection for Xbox because that's the only way to play Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Oh, God.
Unless you want to buy boxes. I don't think you understand how anal I am about this. It's absolutely you have to be perfect.
So he owns it for one game. Anyway, the game that we busted out, ironically enough, was you're gonna laugh at this, especially you, Ted. We were playing Primal Rage.
Oh my god. Did you see the new YouTube alphas that came out for Primal Rage 2, a game that was canceled when it was 99% complete?
Yeah, I knew about Primal Rage 2, but I didn't see the new alphas.
The gameplay video in Primal Rage 2, instead of dinosaurs, it's people.
Giant people. I remember that seeing the preview.
Giant people.
What?
And Primal Rage also had very confusing special moves, like hold three buttons and then move the joystick back and forward.
Wow.
Yeah, that one didn't stick.
Primal Rage did not age well, but it's fun to play on a more goofy level.
I actually have a list of fighting games, which go on a list of games that actually get better when you're drunk, and it's Primal Rage and SVC Chaos, which is SNK versus Capcom. Which is a game that came out on the Neo Geo and the Xbox, the original Xbox.
Mm-hmm. I had and that.
Yeah.
Basically, the game is broken to the fact that the hidden characters in that are so broken that they are banned. And it's rare these days to ban a character in tournament play, much less ban 16.
Mm. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or 8. You know what? No one remembers a lot other than that one of the hidden guys was Gainitz and he threw wind things and you couldn't dodge them. Most people don't care about fighting games, as it turns out, but I care.
Ted cared.
You know, anyway. Though, that era of fighting games was pretty badass. You found like some really quirky games like Time Killers and Clay Fighters, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters. You know,
for the record, I am undefeated against Justin Wong at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters.
Except what the fuck?
Okay. At the closing party for Family Fun Arcade, they had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighter set up, and I played as the Rat King and just cheesed the fucking shit out of Justin.
Nice.
And, that guy, let me tell you, all he likes to do is text on his fucking phone. I don't know if he knows what human interaction is. But, Justin, come up for air.
That's cool. What the phone is for.
The phone is just, I'm not cool enough to be loved by Justin, but it's okay. You know, he's got all his recent tournament wins. Oh, wait.
What?
Damn.
Oh, snap. Second.
Justin, if you hear this, I'm really sorry, but I'm just trying to make a name for myself, and I do that by climbing over your back.
Second jab. First, Justin Wong, and I was a little bit more cowardly in my insult, so
if Skullgirls makes it to Evo, I'm going one-on-one with that guy, and I know I can beat him at Skullgirls legit, because I know what this is
anyway. Anyway, back to some Primal Rage. I did the pissing fatality.
That fatality, that was Chaos the Ape, who fought also by using farts and other
and that did move, he vomit too?
Yeah, he probably did. And that move was banned in Super Nintendo. You try to do it, or it could be banned by an arcade dip switch. You would go for it, but then a giant censored sign would go all over the screen. But then it's okay. You still killed him, and it was good.
I'm trying to think. I know one of the stores banned that game, too. I think it was Walmart or something.
I don't remember that far back. I didn't remember really Walmart existed.
So it was good playing that collection. That collection actually had some pretty good stuff, but for some reason we focused on Primal Rage. The other game I played, now mind you, I some people still don't know this, which still shocks me. I know you guys know of this game. I played Ninja Gaiden, the original. And when I say original, not the NES version, the original arcade version.
I never played it.
You never played it? Okay. The original arcade version of Ninja Gaiden is a very quirky title. It's offbeat. It's not as deadly serious as the NES or even the modern interpretations are by any means. It's a very strange game. Ted, have you played it, Chris?
No, not the arcade. I played the NES one.
I definitely have played Ninja Gaiden over the years, and you know, that game, you put monsters in a spot. You spawn monsters when I'm jumping over the cliff. I mean, we might as well be playing I Want to Be the Guy. Also, to have a boss, the only way to beat is to never take any damage the entire level, and then you basically just have to race him down to the bottom of like your health because you can't. Okay, this is a request to all the listeners out there. If anyone knows a way to dodge Bloody Mouth's attacks, so that he does not hit you and you do not take damage, please let me know. It's something I've been wondering for about 20 years.
Wait, are we talking about the Super Nintendo, the Nintendo version, or the arcade?
I'm talking about the arcade version.
I was talking about the Nintendo version.
Okay. The arcade version's a whole different beast. It's a very it's a very odd game. It's a beat 'em up.
Okay.
But
well, that would explain, like, you know, I guess Dead or Alive or something, or even like, you know, the new Ninja Gaiden, I guess, the way that it plays, you know, that explains it a lot, actually.
Yeah, maybe the way it plays, but in some ways it's different because it's not serious at all. It's a very odd game. It's basically the plot is Ryu touring America fighting people.
So like the other Ryu of notes.
Yeah, yeah. And
he's
and
touring
then,
America and, fighting people.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what
this
I.
This is Seattle.
Before.
Punch that guy.
Pretty much. And they were a bunch of, you know, fucking Jason Voorhees looking guys and stuff. The other thing too about this game is its continue screen, which is still infamous to this day. Which what happens is you see Ryu chained up in a room by a bunch of fucking rape crazy demons and a fucking slaw blade coming down, and it will saw you in half if you do not continue.
Interesting.
Yes.
I think I do remember that one, actually. Like, that was, like, one of the most iconic continuous screens out there.
you know, it's just as bad as the continuous screens from Conquest of the Crystal Palace or fucking Fatal Fury or even recently, you know, there's kind of an homage to that in the new Double Dragon game.
Oh, yeah. Really? There is?
Kind of, yeah. It has one of those continue screens that were over dramatic, where in the new Double Dragon game from Way Forward, you know, the bad guy's gonna poke your guy's eyes out if you don't continue soon.
So I think I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of the homage to like the final fight one where you're tied up and the bomb's gonna blow you up. So I don't know what the fuck people were smoking for those fucking continue screens. They were fucking sadistic. Let's torture you to death.
It's the Japanese.
But Way Forward is not Japanese. They're just inspired by him, obviously.
Yep.
So let's cut people in half, blow them up, and poke out their eyes. And in Conquest of the Crystal Palace, this is the worst one. It's an obscure platformer for the NES that I absolutely love. In the continue screen, you play as a little boy trying to rescue a princess. In the continue screen, you find the little boy tied up, and water is rising slowly.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to drown him.
I don't remember that, and I played that game.
Yeah, he's hanging like off a cliff, and he's tied up, and the water level's raising.
Oh, that's fucked up.
And he's a little child.
Jesus.
Oh, NES games, how dark and violent you were.
For some, not all of them.
So there you go. And speaking of Way Forward, the other game I've been playing, which is not really old school but homage, is I got bored at school and I popped in one of my favorite games on the DS, the regular DS, and that is Contra 4.
Ah, nice.
That was a fantastic game.
Oh, it's still so fucking good. I mean, that is, I don't know, that's one, I don't know if that's the best Contra game, but it's up there. If you know, oh my god, that game is excellent.
Yeah, my friend Christian is like really into the Contra series, and actually one of the first things that I told him to get on his new 3DS was Contra 4, and we, you know, I popped that sucker in on my 3DS and I had him play it a little bit of it, because you know, he ordered his on Amazon and he got hooked. He's like, all right, this is a good idea, then buying this fucking game, great idea. And it holds up. It's really still, it's you know, as a numbered, you know, continuation for a Contra game, it feels like a natural progression in the series, you know?
It does. It does. And the thing about that game, too, is, mind you, I have two copies of it.
Oh, Jesus.
But I only have two copies because I have two copies, one for my DS and one for my 3DS.
What? So yeah, you can play with yourself?
No, I could play with my buddies.
Oh, Jesus.
I do have friends, Alex. I do.
Okay.
So I even said I played Primal Rage with a buddy earlier, Alex. Jeez.
All right, fine.
Anyway, no, I mean, Contra 4, you know, is excellent. You can even unlock the original Contra, too.
You just do that by finishing the game?
No, you have to
put in the Contra code?
No, what you do is... what I tell everybody to do is this: beat the game on easy, even though it doesn't go all the way. It's got that old school mentality. If you play it on easy, it'll like end the game at level 5. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then what'll happen is you'll unlock the special challenges. And as you complete challenges, you unlock stuff like an art gallery, the original Contra, Super Contra, you know, stuff like that. And the challenges add like an extra dimension to it, which is pretty neat. So. Oh, and you even unlock different character skins, such as characters from Contra Shattered Soldier, Contra Hardcore, the Probotectors. Remember how they censored Contra in Europe and made them robots?
Yes.
Yes, you can even play as the Probotectors. What?
What were the Probotectors? I don't recognize the name.
In Europe, they censored Contra because it's something about...
Too violent.
Know, too violent, yeah. So they took the two guys from Contra and they replaced them with robots.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and you can unlock the Probotectors as character skins.
Nice.
And I mean, that game with the skins and everything, the different character skins you could choose, it's a true homage to the entire Contra series. So I'm satisfied with that title. Now I hope, you know, that this long-rumored Contra game we get is done by WayForward. It has to be done by WayForward.
We'll see. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it, like, to substantiate that it is happening, so we'll see.
Long-rumored.
Yeah, long-rumored, yeah.
Very long-rumored, so that is that for what I've been playing and what we've all been playing. So, next on the on our little podcast episode you guys are watching, Alex,
wait, they're not watching this.
Oh, listening, my bad. Why did I say watching? Because I'm watching something, as you know. And what the fuck? Anyway,
well, how are you gonna segue out of that, huh?
I'm gonna segue out of it just like this. Alex, if I didn't act like this, Gamer Horizon would not be what it is. And we've been doing Gamer Horizon for how many years? 1 year, basically, right?
Yeah, 1 year.
So, Ted and Chris, you guys are new to the group, so why don't you sit around the proverbial fire and hear some of our adventures from the first year of Gamer Horizon?
I don't know what kind of adventures they're talking about. The only thing I remember is that Peter Molyneux did not show up for our interview that I woke up at like 2 o'clock in the fucking morning to do.
Oh, and now I'm crying saying, we can't make games, but I still believe.
Oh, Alex and I have
still is funding Project GOTUS anyway. Whatever. I don't care. Peter Molyneux lost my faith. I bought this game for the that's free. Actually, it's I didn't buy it. It's Curiosity. You just tap squares and then maybe they'll make it.
Thanks to Ted, for sure we will never interview Peter Molyneux.
Peter Molyneux can smell bad. See, you can't defend yourself.
We've had a lot of adventures. I remember, like, I guess podcast adventures. It's not like Alex and I are fucking tumbling off cliffs and shit, you know?
That would be fun.
That would be fun. We should record a whole show of us tumbling off cliffs and then somehow surviving, you know? I think some of the stuff that I remember from the last year, a lot of our debates, I think the one that really set the tone for this show was, and I keep going back to, because I really think this is what set the tone for what this show is about, is our Final Fantasy 13 debate, Alex. And I'm not going to get into the Final Fantasy 13 debate with you tonight, but I think it sets the tone of what we are all about. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of interesting how, you know, like, a lot of our friends basically have told us, like, yeah, you guys have, like, this really good chemistry and stuff, and it sucks you guys don't have a podcast. And then we did the podcast, and we're still doing it, and we're even adding, like, more, you know, awesome people into it, you know? It's the natural progression of this whole, you know, podcast/website. I think it's even silly to just limit it to the podcast, because the website is, like, it's all... Like, if the podcast is the head, like, the body and arms and the legs is basically the website, you know?
Yeah, and you know who makes who helps make the body and the legs move is Ted here, Ted.
Yes.
Yes. So I don't know if you want me to say this or not, Alex, but we kind of have titles now, huh? Which is something I didn't even have in the first podcast. I was just Alex's co-host. Oh, yeah, I'm fucking special, you know?
Well, it's like, you know, it's going to be on the website. So, I mean, I don't think it needs mentioning. Yeah. Like, the bottom line is that, you know, we've gotten to know pretty much, like, everybody who is, like, involved with the website a little bit better and stuff. And I think that the extension of this is we want to really create a community around, you know, like, what we're, like, you know, like, really passionate about, which is games. And, of course, I guess debates, I guess, in a way. That's what you're implying? I don't know.
Yeah, debates. We got to have debates. You know, next week, I think there's going to be a debate coming on. You'll find out when you hear next week's episode. So,
that
you know.
That sounded naughty, but okay.
Yeah, a little too much naughty, you know. I have certain things I don't want to tell the audience anyway.
Okay,
Alex is disturbed at the moment. I think the thing about Gamer Horizon that's always been fun is just the variety of games that Alex and I have played. And like you said, adding Ted and Chris and Ari, we like triple that variety. Mm-hmm. As well. I think like the what you're playing segments are a bit more interesting, you know,
and a bit more lively, especially today's.
Well, at least I didn't bore anybody, motherfucker. But I think it was a lot of fun. I think going into the segments like we did for the last year, you know, trying new things out. Trying new segments. Some segments worked, some segments didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, one segment I remember that failed miserably was an idea of mine where we did versus battles.
Oh, yeah. What was it again?
It was just taking video game characters. And I remember we did one with Mike Tyson versus one of the Pokemon, something ridiculous. And we got the most obscene email ever. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. It was when, you know, we were doing, like, some sort of, like, thing where people would email us, like, what would be, like, the craziest, like, video game, you know, dream match or something. And, yeah, do you remember that email? And, yeah.
Yeah. I won't even tell how it ended.
It wasn't really, you know, it was weird. It wasn't so much entertaining as it is weird and really kind of like off the wall, you know, and it did fail miserably. But I think the best memory that I have, though, of last year is when we got Richard Ross from Operation Rainfall. I thought he was a pretty fun guy to have on the show.
And he really, you know, he really caught on to our sense of humor and the way we worked really quick. You know, he played off of us real well. That was a good interview.
Yeah, and actually, like, it's funny listening to that, like, episode again, talking about, like, Pandora's Tower and how we're all hoping the Pandora's Tower. I think that was the episode that I even predicted that, you know, Pandora's Tower was going to be released by Exceed or something along those lines.
Yeah, you did.
You know, it was really interesting, like, that that played out this year, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
And by the way, the Wii is not dead.
There's still one more game coming out.
Jeez.
But let's talk about an incident that you and I have referred to several times during the interview. And of course, Ted completely killed our chances of interviewing this fella. Thank you, Ted. But,
you're welcome.
But you know what? He set us up anyway. Alex, we were kind of hyping this interview with Peter Molyneux, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like pretty positive about it, like on Twitter. I even DM'd him. He even gave me like his Skype name and all that stuff. And of course, didn't show up.
Yeah, I got up at like 3 a.m. I couldn't sleep that night. Like, I'm going to interview Peter Molyneux.
And it didn't show up. But you know, hey, you know what? He never answered my IMs. Like, I IM'd him and stuff like that. And he just, you know, never did. But, you know, what can you do? The guy is busy, like, you know, making like advertising for like his goddess game and putting it in Curiosity, you know? How sad is that, that Curiosity turned into advertising for this, for his game? You know,
a little bit sad.
Yeah. But you know what? You know, I have respect for him as a game designer. You know, all joking aside, but yeah, that was an unfortunate incident. I don't know what happened. Unfortunately, he never got back to me. As far as what happened, you know, hey, you know, no hard feelings, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, Ted, no hard feelings.
I do where my good Lord takes me, and that sentence didn't make any sense. I may or may not be playing the drinking game.
Okay.
What drinking game are we playing? Is it the one called Do the Shot, and then if you win, you do another shot?
Probably.
Yeah, that's the one we're playing.
It compounds.
You take a shot every time you take a shot.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
What the fuck?
Anyhow, let's see. What else did we do? Oh, remember how we talked about cave games endlessly?
Yeah. Cave games are good, but come on. That was crazy. 6 episodes, what was it?
Yeah, and it wasn't all my fault, because when I stopped talking about them, you got an iPad and bought the motherfucking games.
Yeah, I did. I did. So it wasn't entirely your fault. I will share the blame.
Indeed.
But I think, though, it bears repeating. Like, we had a lot of fun, like, last year. I mean, we had, like, a lot of experimentations and stuff, but for the most part, like, you know, there's energy there, you know?
That first quarter last year, we talked a lot about RPGs. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, how many fucking RPGs came out, remember?
A lot.
A lot of fucking RPGs. I remember...
I'm not even going to list them out, because it's just ridiculous to list them all out.
I remember we talked a lot about Kingdoms of Amalur for a while.
Yeah, because I was really, you know, like, you know, addicted to it, and then Chris finished it, and for some reason I just stopped. Like, I'm literally at the doorstep of, like, you know, the last area of the game, and I'm like, man, I'm not going to play it anymore. You know?
Chris finished the Legacy of Kingdoms of Amalur. How did you like Kingdoms of Amalur, Chris?
Minus that bug, it was actually really fun. I liked the weapons. There was a lot to it, but it did seem like there was a lot missing from it. I mean, I think the main thing is it came out of nowhere. There was no backstory for it. And I also think people got caught up in the issues the developer was having, especially with trying to that stuff with 383 Studios or 38 Studios.
Yeah.
And trying to make their MMO and having to come out with this instead.
Yeah. That's just unfortunate.
I think that really doomed the sales for the game, because it was actually a really good game.
And EA didn't market it.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that whole thing. Oh, well. Oh, what can you do?
Yeah, oh well. But yeah, let's think about the future though, because that's like the most exciting part about this retrospective. Because a lot of the things that have happened to us in the past year have kind of prepared us for what we're gonna do this year, you know?
Yeah, we're a little bit more ambitious this year.
Just a tiny bit.
Just a little bit.
Three more persons ambitious. Does that even make sense? Does that make sense? I don't know.
So yes. Well, the thing is we've added, you know, Ted and Chris and Ari, who unfortunately could not make it here.
Yeah.
But hopefully next week we'll have the whole gang.
Yeah, we definitely will. So hopefully if he actually manages to finish this fucking Ni No Kuni review.
Yes, that's what happens when you get into side quests. You know what? I can't criticize. I remember when I did my review of Dragon Age, remember? Long time ago?
Yeah.
You got upset at me because I kept doing side quests, too.
I know, and I was like really coming down on you on that. I'm like, come on, finish the fucking game!
Dragon Age.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty excited about like what's going to happen within the next few months, because I mean, only within the past few weeks and stuff, we've just been seeing a lot of new faces like on the website, just kind of checking it out and all that. But you know, what I'd really love though is if people actually commented on the freaking articles, because the likes are pretty cool, and I like the fact that people like our stuff. But it would be cool if there's like some discussion on there, because what I really want to see is like a community forming around us, you know.
Yes, comment, discuss, argue, be fanboys, do something.
I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, what do you guys... So I guess as the new members of, like, Gamer Horizon... Well, we'll start with the newest one, because actually Chris was not a member of Gamer Horizon in its very first iteration. What would you want to see on the website, Chris?
Probably more videos.
Videos?
Video review. I don't want to say video reviews, but I'll say trailers. Trailers. Probably a little more of that.
Okay.
That's what I was getting at.
That's it?
Yeah.
You're pretty, you know, I guess that's pretty simple. I think trailers on.
People are pretty easy to satisfy. It's the jaded ones that are difficult.
Okay.
That are really difficult to satisfy, because they know what they want, but they don't know what they want, and their tastes are always changing.
Alex, I'm just joking.
I'm pretty consistent. What the fuck are you talking about?
I know. I'm giving you shit. So Ted, what do you think about the future of Gamer Horizon? What do you want to see on the website?
I actually want to see more original video content. That's one of my passions from the past. I like doing a lot of original video content. I've really fallen out of that as of late, and I'd love to get back into it. But right now, it's not the right time for that for the site yet. But I think that hopefully it will be soon.
Wow, so both video content, huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
I would have to agree. I could maybe integrate some of my video making stuff there, my rants, particularly gaming related rants. But again, I agree with Ted. The time is not right for that.
The time is not yet here.
It will be here. And for the time being, I can rant on the show. So
all I want from the website, and no one's asking me, by the way, in case.
Oh, you know, yeah. What do you want from the website, Alex?
I do want a little bit more sophisticated, like, kind of articles. Because I like, you know, recently I actually, oh, my God. Like, I completely forgot that I have, like, a Game Informer subscription.
Like, I think mine expired, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, remember, there's a thing called, like, Game Informer that, you know, you kind of get, like, with your power-up rewards card from GameStop. Yeah, people don't remember that anymore. But, like, you know, like... I actually opened it up for the first time. That was the first Game Informer I opened up in about 2 or 3 years that I've subscribed to the goddamn magazine. And, you know, they've gotten a lot better at presenting, like, their information. And it's, like, really, really awesome, like, the way that they have their layouts and stuff like that. And I'm hoping, like, in the future we can do something like that, but for the web. And, you know, and not to say that it's going to be a lot of pizzazz and no, like, you know, like, no good content. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people who don't like to read, but at the very least, the whole graphics and stuff hopefully will you'll make people want to do it. You know, people want to read it. So
pictures.
But I think, but I'm really happy with all the stuff that we will put on the website. I'm really proud of like our editorial team and stuff, and the podcasting team, which is pretty much me and Anthony at this point.
Oh, shit.
You know, I edit and he dictates,
and I host, and
yeah,
you know. Yeah, and you guys are all my subordinates, which is nice. I'm just joking.
Jesus.
You know, Chris, go get me some water. Ted, trim my toenails.
What? Ew.
No.
Hey, I got the good job.
Oh, shit.
Alex, never mind.
Yeah, so that's all I got to say about that. I mean, Anthony, really? Just guys, really? Just video content?
That's what I feel, you know? That's what I feel.
Yeah.
I feel videos are important to a gaming website, but, you know, like Ted said and you said, it's time is not right. But I think if you do videos that are different from the norm, which I know Ted does, and I do too, I think you could get a different audience. I think, you know, if we were to do something as – and I'm not trying to insult other websites or other reviewers, but if you do something mundane as a video review, that's one thing. But if you do something that's more editorial, more of, you know, that considers the audience but also the editorial staff, I think that's – That's a good thing. Like a rant, like one of my rants would be perfect, you know, or what, you know, some of Ted's fighting game stuff.
But the time is not right.
Yeah, the time is not right, though. I agree.
Yeah.
And I get to do rants here anyway, so it works.
Yeah. So kudos. Well, should we pass the buck to, I don't know if that's the right term, pass the buck to our listeners and stuff to see what they would want for the website?
Indeed. Yeah. Yes.
Ah, that's
yes.
a great idea.
Yes.
Yes, send us an email too, send us emails at mailbox@gamerhorizon.com. And it doesn't have to be about this particular topic. It can be about anything. Well, not about anything, but any questions you have about gaming or about the podcast.
Well, yeah, we have to be careful about that because not necessarily everything, because we did get like a politics question. And that's outside the realm of video games.
I forgot about that.
What was the question?
I don't even want to bring it up right now. But yeah, it was like, what? Like, what?
If you want a political discussion, go on the iTunes store or whatever, top in political podcast.
Yeah. Because
you won't find that shit here, son.
Jesus. Look at you, like, getting gangster and shit.
Yeah, I'm all, son, no Obamas or Mitt Romneys here. This is about the Marios and the Marcus Phoenixes and the clouds.
Yes. Right. Indeed. Yes.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Is that right? No? Okay.
We're talking about the Indeeds. I guess, like, you know, that's the time for people to take shots.
Take lots of shots and get in touch.
I think that was like, you know, I added like maybe five or six Indeeds there. So guy is probably totally like passed out right now.
We're going to cause the drunk driving stats to go up. Fuck, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good. Anyway, so moving forward in our little podcast, getting close to the end, getting close to the fucking flagpole and jumping on it and seeing fireworks that appear for random reasons, let's continue to the next level.
I was going
to
say it's not random, but okay.
Don't even get into that discussion. that's more confusing than anything else in gaming. Anyhow, the next topic is this week, this little game called Dead Space 3 comes out, and it is classified under what? It is called a survival horror game, although many people would disagree with that. So we're going to discuss Dead Space 3 and the future of the survival horror genre.
I don't know if we can discuss like Dead Space 3 because no one played the demo.
Well, we could discuss the franchise, though. I'm sure I've played 1 and 2. Have you played 1 and 2, Alex? I'm sure you have.
I played 1. Okay. And I played Dead Space Extraction, which is the light gun shooter.
The rail shooter. Chris,
yes.
What about you? You played 1 and 2?
Yeah, I played 1 and 2, played Extraction. If you pre-ordered Dead Space 2, they were giving you all the other Dead Space games that came out, the ones for the Wii. So Extraction, yeah, it was just Extraction. I have those on the PS3.
Awesome, awesome. And Ted, what about you?
I have played Dead Space 1, and I haven't finished it. And Dead Space 2 is owned and on my backlog.
The infamous backlog.
And the worst part is I have Dead Space 1 on Xbox and I have Dead Space 2 on PlayStation because I wanted Dead Space Extraction, which technically is also on my backlog list.
I have that same situation. I have Dead Space 1 on the Xbox and Dead Space 2 on PS3. I'm probably going to get Dead Space 3 on PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I'm getting it on PlayStation.
I should follow Alex's fucking approach.
What approach? Just like not actually fit or well, yeah, I'm not getting like Dead Space 3 if that's what you're talking about.
No. The fact that you know, if you buy a game on one console, the first game in the series, you buy the
sequel. Oh, my OCD, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, being OCD like you. Yeah, we all need a little OCD-ness in our lives. Because it's Dead Space is all over the fucking place for me and Ted. God damn.
What do you mean by all over the place?
Well, Ted has it for Xbox.
Oh, okay. That's what you meant by all over the place. I'm like, yeah. What? Yeah.
Yes, sir. So anyway, about the Dead Space series, any thoughts, comments? I like it. I think it's a very atmospheric game. I dig it. I dig one. Yeah,
I loved one. I don't like the idea of two, and I certainly don't like the idea of three. It's just really, I don't know, it's kind of, I don't know, it's really...
Changing?
Yeah, big time. And I think it's because, like, the original developers and stuff, like, are no longer there. Like, those guys are, like, in Sledgehammer Games at Activision, you know? They bounced, like, after the first game, dude. That's why the second game was so different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had to try and continue the story. Plus, they had to put something else out.
Mm-hmm. But technically, you could, if you wanted to, pretend the other two games that happened with the way the first game ended. The first game ended on a very sad note, but it had closure to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't want to see a one-off, but it could have been. Would have been cool, but, you know, eh.
Yeah, I think the thing with Dead Space 1 was I thought it was a very good game. I thought my issue with the first one was that very weak boss battle at the end. That was an okay boss battle. That game did come out in 2008, year of the bad boss battle. You know, I'm looking at you, Fable 2, and I'm looking at you, Gears of War 2. You know, so it's fitting that game came out that year.
Okay.
Oh, God. But other than that, there were some great moments. I love the parts where you actually were out in space walking in space.
Oh, yeah, where all you can hear is yourself breathing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really nice.
And just the sound of, you know, just the sound. If space has any sound, I'm fucking going to have.
The sound effects for the game were just really good in general. No that background game, music. Everything's quiet, eerily quiet, dark. You know, it was a really cool concept.
It was. And that game had really good atmosphere. I think I remember at the time a lot of people were comparing it to Bioshock at that time. And I can say atmospheric-wise, it compared pretty well to Bioshock.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think of the concept of survival horror, and you come up with, you know, in space on a ship, derelict ship, and you got to try and escape, and, you know, you think of something like Dead Space, but it just didn't come together for a lot of people.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of them just passed them by.
Yeah. I think the thing with Dead Space is, one thing that I think makes it a unique game, at least the first one, was the fact that the way you killed enemies. You know, it wasn't as simple as, say, you know, a headshot or something. I remember you literally had to cut enemies to pieces.
Yeah, it was interesting. I liked it, and I didn't like it. It was too, everything's repetitive, you know, in any form of game you have to shoot somebody or shoot a creature like that. But I thought it was a little too repetitive. You have to take the limbs off and that killed it.
Yeah.
Something like that didn't seem like it would kill it or should kill it.
Personally, that didn't bug me too much.
Yeah.
What bugged me a little bit was the backtracking.
I think you had to. I mean, the ship was only so big. But, I mean, it was fairly quick just to get to a different space or a different part of the ship.
But when you do backtracking, though, it felt like the backtracking was a little forced and contrived. It wasn't like something like Metroid where you backtrack to an area to get to an even larger area. It felt like more like, oh, I have to backtrack to unlock one small room that has a key to get to another area, and then I have to backtrack all the way back to open that door. In Metroid, it was more like a little bit more straightforward, you know? You know, Super Metroid comes to mind. So the backtracking felt like it was a little bit more contrived and just kind of poorly done. So,
well, I think, I mean, I'll say it again, you have to have that sort of thing when you're stuck on board a ship that's only so big.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. And there's another shot being drunk down. I'm sorry, society. So that's Dead Space. But with Dead Space, you know, being, I guess, one of the more modern survival horrors, and again, that can be argued, what is the future of the survival horror genre? Because survival horror has been, I don't even know how to describe it anymore these days. So, Ted, really quickly, tell me what your thoughts on modern survival horror is.
I think modern survival horror, like the game for me that basically lays out the tenets of survival horror is Zombie U, because it's a game where you don't have all the information you need to make intelligent decisions and your supplies are really low. So there's always that feeling of dread. It also helps that your character also starts making panicking, scared noises when bad things are happening, which further, you know, elevates your fear. And then the worst part is you cannot look at the screen when you need to look at your inventory. It is a fantastic modern survival horror game because it follows the tenets of lack of information, lack of knowledge, and lack of resources. You are going into a situation unprepared. That is survival horror.
Yeah.
So Zombie U is what Left 4 Dead should have been.
No, Left 4 Dead did exactly what it said it wanted to do. It's a co-op shooter, and then there are zombies.
Yeah, I don't know.
There were no extra game pads around to look at back then.
That's true. That is true. But that's a good point.
If I do remember, though, Chris, you played Zombie U, right? What did you think of it?
Oh, yeah. It was fun. I really liked it. It took some getting used to with the pad and everything, but it was fairly simple to get into. And it was fresh. It was new. And it keeps you on the edge of your seat.
So you guys are saying Zombie U would possibly be what survival horror could be then. I have to play that game. I can't really say a whole lot at this point because I have yet to play Zombie U. Which I
have to get like a Wii U, so.
yeah, I plan on doing that soon, I hope.
He hopes.
Yeah, I hope. I probably will. Okay, I'm gonna fucking buy one. There you go.
Oh, really? Hey, I hate to cut you guys short, but I have a Wednesday night fights to make, and rumor has it there might not be too many more of these, so or at least not in the way they are now. So I want to make this one, so I am gonna have to go. You guys finish up the podcast, and I'll see you all next week.
All right,
bye, Ted.
We'll see you, Ted.
Bye, bye.
See you. So speaking of modern horror, survival horror stuff, I know Alex and I have talked a lot about what happened to Resident Evil, and I know you're not a fan of current Resident Evil games, but there was one game released last year that I know we talked about was Resident Evil Revelations.
Which is also, by the way, for some reason, getting an HD port, but not a Vita port.
That makes no sense.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into that because obviously, like, you know, we've already covered that sort of thing before on the website, but it is a pretty good game. I mean, it's sad that I haven't followed through and finished it, but you know, it is really true to form with, you know, traditional survival horror. Like, it's really interesting, but I don't know, like, I don't want to get into a review of it, so you might as well take it away, Anthony.
Okay. I think the thing with Revelations is it's the first survival horror game, and survival horror is becoming a term that is becoming a little bit more broad, but it carries on the traditions that were started, and I'm not going to say Resident Evil. I'm going to say the original Alone in the Dark, because that's what really started what we consider survival horror. The original Alone in the Dark. What was that, Alex? 93, 92?
I have no memory of the exact year.
it was the early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you say the word, you know, Alone in the Dark these days, they only remember that shitty U-Bull movie.
Oh, God. Yeah, let's not talk about that. But, you know, and then there was that 92. Capcom... 92? Okay.
Yeah.
And then there was that Capcom Famicom game, and I believe even Shinji Mikami was involved with
that.
Was
it Haunted House or something like that?
Yeah, and he said it was a direct influence on the original Resident Evil too. God damn, what was it though? Sweet Horror? I'll have to look that up real quick. I'm really curious.
Now, did you play any of the Fatal Frame games for the PS2?
No. I'm not really familiar with that. Are you pretty familiar with it, you and Alex?
Yeah, I played one of them. I think it was the first one that came out.
The game is called Sweet Home.
Okay, Sweet Home. Game.
Yeah, but yes, I actually have all three Fatal Frame games.
Indeed. You don't have the fourth one that Nintendo is not allowing...
Well, of course not, because it's like region, you know, region specific, and it's all in fucking Japanese.
We should get that game.
But those were interesting in that you had to take pictures of monsters, and
but that's the thing, though. It's what's interesting. The most interesting hook about Fatal Frame is it forces you to look for shit that you don't want to look at.
Yeah.
You know, the last thing you want to do when you're in a fucking horror game is to look at the goddamn ghost straight in the fucking eye in order to take a goddamn picture of them. That is a brilliant idea.
God, shit.
Yeah. To be honest, I used to have a friend who literally cannot play that game. He cannot play that game. He loves like survival horror, but he is terrified to death of that game. He will not play that game whatsoever.
You know what, speaking of survival horror games that are kind of in that vein is I got to bring these up because I actually enjoy them. I know they're a little bit kind of... Some people like them, some people don't, is the Clock Tower games.
Yeah, I used to have Clock Tower 3, and I did have Clock Tower 1 and 2. Clock Tower 3 was actually really good.
I played the original one that came out on the PS1 to find out it was like the sequel to an SNES one or something, a Super Famicom one. In Japan? The first one we got over here in the States.
I don't remember. I really don't. I'm not familiar with that series.
But I gotta say the Clock Tower games were unique in that you didn't have any guns or anything. And you were basically being chased by a homicidal maniac.
Yeah. I played the first one for a little while on the PlayStation and... Couldn't get into it that much.
Scissor Man.
Yeah.
Scissor Man. Oh, I remember you could hide from Scissor Man in the toilet.
It was a pretty brilliant idea, but the execution needed a little bit more refining, I think.
You know what? I remember the problem with that game was the controllers were a little sluggish.
Oh yeah, the main character. No
analog stick.
No, well, not even that. Well, not even that. It was just like, you know, the main character just like was slow. It was like molasses. It's
like 5 frames a second or something.
It wasn't the frame rate. It was just like she was, for somebody who's trying to run away from a fucking monster, she sure isn't doing a good job of doing it.
Well, he was slow too, so.
No, I guess so, huh?
Caught up with her.
I guess Clock Tower was just fucking slow.
In general. Yeah. But, I mean, Clock Tower 3 was a fairly decent attempt at, like, you know, at trying to reinvigorate that franchise. It's really sad that it just never caught on, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. If they did a game like that or similar to it today, I think it would be bloody brilliant. The problem is would it sell? Would it not sell? I mean, that's what gaming's about these days with the publishers, you know. So I don't know if you could get a game like that to sell in the mainstream, at least. You'd probably would have to make it niche, perhaps.
Probably. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows with the market? But, yeah, that's, I guess, our what we think of old-school survival horror. What do you think... Other than Zombie U, do you think there will be steps forward made into the survival horror, or would you think it's going to go into the path of it being shooter-like, Chris? What do you think?
It depends. I mean, you can go back to the old Fatal Frame and start taking photos, or, you know, I think they might have to go old school with the Clock Tower and take away the guns altogether and just see if you can survive on your own.
Well,
no, shooting back.
Exactly. I think your comment making something, like I said earlier and you just said, I think with the way games are made now, you could do something brilliant with that concept. Not necessarily with that franchise, but with that concept of a survival horror game. So I don't know, man. I want to see more in more traditional survival horrors, but I also want to see him do something different. It sounds like Zombie U is trying to do something a little bit different while still having that survival horror aspect. So,
yeah.
Alex, what do you think?
I think Zombie U is survival horror in its core. And the one thing that's really interesting about that is that they didn't really start off to be that way. It used to be like an alien kind of first-person shooter that they announced, I think it was like 2 years ago or something like that, and then they wound up with this. And what's really good about Zombie U is just that, you know, it uses like the strengths of the Wii U to its maximum potential. And I think that, you know, we need to be a little bit more creative when, you know, if we want to tackle this genre again. And I think that Zombie U has a pretty good boilerplate on what we could do right now, but I'm expecting more creative solutions or, you know, implementations of this kind of system in the future. Because I don't think, you know, I certainly don't want this genre to die, because I think horror games are, like, fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think with games, as much as I want to play Dead Space 3 and Dead Space 2, I'm kind of in the camp where I don't know if I would classify them as survival horror. Maybe horror shooters would be more accurate.
I'm not sure if you can... Yeah, it's such a weird... you know, kind of divide that's happening right now, especially with the Resident Evil games, that they're kind of, you know, the term of the definition of survival is now like, oh my God, so much action. You need to like be able to reload on time and shoot better, which is more like a shooter.
And I think
like modern warfare.
I think the problem too with some of the survival horror games, Dead Space, I'm looking at you, Resident Evil 5, I'm looking at you, is shops. I don't think shops have any place in the survival horror game.
They did a pretty good job with it in 4.
Yeah, that's why I didn't bring up 4. But I think I think 4 is the exception. But I think in other games, it just doesn't have a place. You know, like you know, oh, I could go buy ammo. What's the point of hunting down that ammo if you can buy it? I don't know. It just...
Well, I'll say this. The thing for hunting down ammo, you have to be in a closed-off area, like a mansion or a spaceship where, you know, ammo is scarce. It would be. But for Dead Space on a ship, you know, you had stores in that one where you can replenish everything. So, you know, they took that aspect out of it.
I don't know. I guess.
I think you have to have you have to be in an enclosed off area for it to be somewhat scary. Silent Hill was only scary when you were in the buildings. I mean, when you were walking out on the street, you know, you're just running from a mob.
I don't know about that. I think the streets in the original Silent Hill, particularly, there was something eerie about walking in the streets in that game. You're the Silent Hill expert, Alex.
It's all the fog.
And the fog. Would you agree with me on that or no?
About what?
About
the streets of Silent Hill.
The streets being a little bit eerie.
There are times when the streets could be scary. I mean, it's not just like a daytime and fog. There are times where it'd be complete daylight and it suddenly turn dark, which, you know, mirrors like the interiors of the areas that you're exploring. So it just depends on the implementation of it. I think that Silent Hill can be a scary franchise. It's just recently they've taken some weird missteps for some reason.
We're looking at you, Downpour. We're looking at you.
I have a quick question. Did you guys play Ghostbusters? The latest one that came out, the movie tie-in one.
Yeah, I finished it.
What did you think in terms of survival horror? Because that had its moments, especially for a game that was supposed to be funny.
I think it did a pretty good job of actually honoring the source material, but as far as like being survival horror, not so much.
No. It's not survival horror, but it had its moments where it did, you know, scare the crap out of me at times.
Really?
Yeah. You
know, the game had some redundancy issues for me personally, I remember. But I think overall Ghostbusters was a solid game and one of the best franchise games in this gen, maybe. But it's a game that a lot of people unfortunately forgot about, and I think that's a little bit unfortunate because it was pretty solid.
Yeah, very fun game.
It was. So like Alex said, though, in closing this episode, Gamer Horizon, make sure you visit our website at GamerHorizon.com. And again, that is GamerHorizon.com. You will find all our editorial stuff. You will find our podcast posted on there. And you'll find maybe a surprise or two every now and then. So make sure you visit, again, GamerHorizon.com. You have any questions, comments, or concerns, and you want it read over the air here on the Gamer Horizon podcast, send it to mailbox@GamerHorizon.com. And this is your host, Anthony. And with that, guys, we are out.